like number six today. It's going to be a problem later. Okay, so my name is Scott Hanselman, and that's not how I spell my name. And you can email me here, or you can email me here, and you can PayPal me here. And you can read my blog here, or here, or here, or here. Or here, or here, or here. Or here. Or you could Google for Scott. And then you'd see that Scott Goo is like fifth. And I'm like 11th. So, yeah. So basically, I got that going for me. Let's do this. Okay, so I want to make sure that people's expectations are set appropriately, because expectations are a really big deal here. A lot of times, people say in the evals, which you're going to need to fill out because my job depends on it, and you're going to say stuff like, you know, totally didn't meet my expectations. Which is great, except I don't know what your expectations are. So what I'm going to do here is not a typical kind of Hanselman talk. So typically it would be like slide, slide, joke, code, slide, joke, joke, picture of a cat, slide, code, code, joke, demo, big finish, and jazz hands. That would be a typical Hanselman talk. So I'm trying this a little different. I'm taking a risk here. So when you score this as an eval, remember that there's a difficulty multiplier. So if this turns out to be a 2.5 quality talk, 2x difficulty, if I stick the landing, superstar, I expect that you score me appropriately. There are no slides. I thought I was doing that to kind of be like, you know, like a revolutionary kind of a Che kind of a thing. But in fact, I didn't have time to do any slides, and I didn't like them keep asking me for the slides. So there are no slides, so don't ask me when the slides are going to be here. What we're going to try to do is we're going to try to build nerddinner.com. I don't know if I'm going to be able to build it in 75 minutes. So I've got a couple of techniques that I'm going to use to make it look like I'm really building it in 75 minutes. But the goal is this, right? So this is kind of a mock-up. This is my sketch flow kind of thing of what this will look like. So there'll be kind of a map there, and there'll be like a logo and some find a dinner, host a dinner navigation, and then there'll be like popular dinners on the side. The idea here is that nerds want to eat dinner, but they don't want to interact with other humans. They don't typically want to make reservations or call ahead. So this is a way of allowing nerds to be social while removing the social aspect of that. This also works for dysfunctional family dinners. And friends that you don't want to friend you on Facebook dinners. So anytime you want to get together with people that you don't really want to get together with, this is going to be the portal for that. This is my Web 2.5 idea. Now, before I do that, this is the same thing that you would find in the book that Rob Connery and Phil and the Goo and I are kind of spreading the word about. I would encourage you to please come up and get some of these limited edition tiny cards that have got the link on the back to the first 185 pages of the book that we're giving away free, Creative Commons. You may have seen this particular book cover here with the foreheads. Then there's the extended forehead edition. I'm actually going to be selling banner ad space on my forehead, so that's going to be a way for me to make a little money. And then I just put my seventh grade picture there. It's because I wanted you to know I've come a long way. That's pretty scary. That is, in fact, a piece of hair that is off the side of my head there. That still does that, in fact. But now I know about gel, which is good. Okay, so let's make that nerd dinner thing. So we'll go file new project. And the way that I'm going to work this is that it's going to be kind of like Julia Childs in cooking. You know how she'll get like a pie and she's like, it's mostly ready. And then she'll put the pie, you know, in the oven. And then she's got like, hey, I'm going to cook a pie now.
There's a little bit of chocolate on the edge there.
We're going to take the pie and stick it in the oven.
Into the oven.
And then she'll stick it in the oven, and then she'll open it up. Oh, there's a pie done. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The boring stuff, all that cooking part. We skipped that part.
So in she's a like, pound of
hey,
water.
Oh, crap, there's a pie there. Don't show them that.
I already have one.
Yeah. So.
A one that's going to come out. I yeah. have.
And this one's already done.
Several.
So, yay, you just skip the boring part.
I just want you to see everything.
So I'm going to do that exact same thing with MVC so that you won't have to watch me write too many link queries all day long. So that's the goal of this particular talk. So we hit File, New, and this does assume, from an expectations perspective, that you do have some understanding about how MVC works. I mean, if you are here and you've never done an MVC, bear with me. I may go a little fast and assume a couple of things about you understanding MVC, but read the book. There's a tutorial that walks step by step by step in exquisite Guzian detail about all of the details. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Yes, Create a Unit Test Project, and hit OK. Bring up our MVC application one here, and I get my app and my tests sitting down at the bottom. Now, I'm going to need some data. So what I've done, rather than having you guys watch me mess around with the tables, I'm just going to bring in a little database here, and I'll drop it in. I'll show you what it is so you don't feel like I'm cheating you. We're going to open up our Nerd Dinner database. It's a really simple database because right now we just want dinners and then RSVPs for dinners. It's pretty straightforward. And then for users and stuff, we're just going to use the built-in membership. So we've instrumented the database automatically for membership. So membership kind of happens for free. And then let's right-click in here and we'll say add new item. Oops. Say add new item. And we'll bring up this very, very scary dialogue. Are there really enough things in here, do you think? And in no order, which is also nice. And I'll pick Link to SQL because it's awesome and it's not dead and you should be excited about that. And I'm going to hit Nerd Dinner and then hit Add. So I'm getting a couple references added automatically. Data.link showed up. And some different things got instantly added to my references. That's why they opened that up. When I added that DBML file, the references folder opened up to let me know that some things had added. And now I've got this Nerd Dinner DBML. From here, I can open up this Server Explorer and I can drag this stuff over. Boom. And hey, it's not Northwind, so let's feel good about that. Yeah. Okay. So now I take the Northwind database and I bring. No, that would be sweet, though, wouldn't it? Okay. Now one of the things that's significant about this is that it's incredibly simple, but there's some pretty sophisticated stuff too that I'm going to show you. First, we just got dinners, and then there's a one-to-many relationship with RSVPs, but I want to be able to do some latitude and longitude work, so I've put in a couple of floats, latitude and longitude, and I want to be able to do like nearest dinners. I want to say find the dinners that are nearest this location. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do that because when thousands of nerds flood this location looking to eat, how will I find them that stuff? So what we did is we used some stuff that Rob Connery came up with. And these are scalar functions and table value functions. And these are kind of crazy. And they're crazy because they use high school math, which I know that a lot of programmers are not familiar with. So I'm going to take a moment to explain how sine and cosine work. I thought that was funny. You guys know you don't know how sine and cosine works. And this is kind of cool. This is some SQL in a table value function that goes and it knows the Earth's radius in kilometers there, you know, because I figured that wouldn't change. So I felt that as a magic number, that was okay, right? The Earth could swell, and then I would just kind of go, oh, okay, well, the Earth swelled. So cool. This will take a latitude and longitude and another latitude and longitude and give you the distance between them, okay? That's being done in SQL. This is the kind of thing that you could do in C sharp, but I figured, you know, why not let the database do the work, especially if there were thousands of dinners? And then I've got this nearest dinners, which is pretty cool. It makes a nice clean join and then uses that other function. It says, give me all the dinners between these, and then I think it's between 100 kilometers. What's cool about this, though, and why I'm showing it to you, is that now I can grab these two functions and I can drag them into Link to SQL, and then they just appear up here. So then now they're methods that I can use in my link queries later. So that's going to make mapping different, and that's on Rob Connery's blog. I think he searched for, like, geospatial data or something like that. So that was easy. That was a problem that was solved by a search. So I've got my DBML, and let's say we're going to have to show some dinners. So I'll say add controller, and you'll notice, of course, that with MVC you've got some instrumentation. So the controller stuff has been added by the installation of MVC, and I'll say I want dinners controller, and I'm going to click here add action methods because I want to get a little bit of free code generation to save some time here. And I got my dinners controller with some just basic index details, create, post, and all they do is return default views. But of course, I don't have any views yet. We can go over here to our views menu and see, I haven't got any dinner views. So I'm thinking about the controller first. I'm thinking about the logic. I want to be able to list dinners. I want to be able to look at dinner details to start with. And then maybe I want to look for like dinners nearby or popular dinners like that. But I've got this DBML file, and I've got the associated generated code for it that lives in here. And that's given me my object, my dinner object, and things like that. If I open that up, we can see I've got RSVPs, I've got dinners. Those two methods that we had before, nearest dinners and dinner distance between, those are in there. And this could be done in nHibernate, or this could be done in Entity Framework. The cool thing about MVC is that when you go file new and you look in the models folder is empty because it doesn't make any dogmatic decisions about that, that kind of thing. And I'll just drag them in there so the models folder doesn't feel too lonely. And I'll make a new class because I want to make a wrapper around this. I want to make a Rob Connery-style dinner repository. And this is going to be the thing that I'm going to interact with. So instead of me talking directly to the link to SQL stuff, I'm going to talk to this this dinner repository. And it'll just kind of sit there by default for now. And I'm not doing this quite test-driven development, but it's kind of like as I need stuff, I'll add it, as opposed to big design up front. I haven't decided anything other than there are some dinners and there's a repository for them. I'll figure out how to talk to them later. And I know when I hit index, which might also be called list, this will be the place that I'm going to go and grab my dinners. Right now, if I build it and run it, I'm just going to get the Hello World standard ASP.NET site. So this is the nice blue ASP.NET site that we've seen before. And if I went and hit dinners/index, you know, it's telling me that there's no view. If I hit dinners by itself, that's telling me that the index is the default. So I'm getting close here in the sense of, all right, well, site/dinners, that's going to take me to index. I have no view yet. I have no functionality. I haven't hooked anything up. But that's where I'm going to want to see my list of dinners. So inside of that, we're probably going to want to go and talk to the repository. And I know I'm going to get some dinners, so I'm going to say probably going to need a repository, dinner, repository. And then this is cool. This is a, forgive me for being an ignorant idiot, but apparently I was the last one to get the memo on this. You know this little deal here? See how I'm like, hold me. Crap. Okay, there you go. This always runs away from me. One time I actually saw it get up and run away. You know, and I don't have the cognitive capacity to click this and effectively push it. But apparently control period does that for you. Apparently I'm the only person in the entire room that didn't already know that. So that adds the using statement at the top there. So I'm like, okay, I can get a handle of this on this whole keyboard thing. Dinner repository repo equals new dinner repository. So now we've got a dinner repository, and I can pull out an interface a little bit later. Down here in dinners, we'll say repo dot, and I don't have anything yet, but I know I'm going to want to do something like find upcoming dinners, which doesn't exist. So I can hit control dot, and I'll generate a method stub. I'm telling it that I'm going to come back later, but go ahead and make one of those over in the repository. And then whatever I get back, I'm probably going to want to make a list of those things. And then I'll probably return that into a view. And I guess I could leave it default, but I'll call it index, and I'll pass in dinners. So at this point, I don't have anything. I'll go over to here. And by hitting control dot, even though the method didn't exist, they gave me a free one. Doesn't have the signature that I wanted. I want it to be public. And I think I'm going to have it return. It was going to be a list of dinners or maybe an iQueryable of dinners. And I'm probably going to need to get all dinners first, too. So I want to have that option. So iQueryable of dinner, find all dinners. And that's going to be easy in this case because I can just go and take my nerd dinner data context. That's the coming out of my link to SQL. And we'll make one of those. So now I can probably just go return db.dinners. So I've got find all dinners. So that's good. That'll give me a list of all of them. But I really want just the upcoming dinners, right? I want the ones that are before now. No, after now. future. So that would be greater than, right? So return from dinner, dinner in, find all dinners where dinner.eventDate is greater than dateTime.now. And let's order by dinner.eventDate, select dinner. Cool, so that's good. We'll look at a way I can do that with test-driven development a little later, but for now, that should do something. I could probably hit a breakpoint there, run this, and see if that actually worked. Keep in mind that we've made no view yet. We're just hooking up controllers to databases at this point. Oops. Let's go back here, and we'll hit dinners. Oops. Come on. There you go. Oh, let's use the Windows 7. Yay. Bam. So there's some dinners in there, so that's cool. Find Washington Wine. So here's a dinner hosted by Phil. How did you get my database? Where did been hacked. And Phil hacked. And we'll hit whap whap. Thank you. And yeah, see, this is the thing, folks. When it doesn't work, what do? We go to sadtrombone.com. Turn my sound on, sound guy. Sound guy? I'm going to have to sad trombone the sound guy. All right, now we feel better about how that went. Sorry, I pulled a fast one. I told him to turn it off after Julia Childs, and he was very good about that, and I respect him for it. So now I'm going to go down here to view. So we've pulled some data out. We've seen that happen. I'm going to go and make a new folder down here, and we'll call it dinners. And here I've got more yummy tooling, add view. This is part of MVC. This is added to Visual Studio. So now I can go here, and I can say, let's make a view called index. But I want to actually use some pre-built generation stuff that's going on here for my CRUD, for my create, read, update, delete, right? So I'm going to pull out a list, and I'm going to say, I want to grab that and make that list of dinners. And I'll use the existing master page. So then I'll hit add. And then it made a bunch of tables. And then at this point, some designer in the audience is like, tables! No! To which I would probably say, dude, it's a table of stuff, so maybe that's okay? Is everything an unordered list? I don't know. Maybe we'll change that in a little bit, because maybe we are offended by these tables. Although, mad props for a TH there on the header, so we feel good about that. So let's run that and see if it worked. And then talk about what happened. We'll hit slash dinners. It is, in fact, a table. Maybe that tag is useful for something. Always getting picked on by the UL mafia. So one of the things that's really interesting about this is that by hitting add view and pointing it to that dinner object and saying I want a list, they went and they wrote a bunch of this stuff for me. This is tedious, right? This is monkey code, right? If enough monkeys slap their hands on a keyboard, an infinite number of monkeys, an infinite number of keyboards, you'll get eventually an HTML table that looks a lot like this. And we've got all of the different things that our objects had. So it used some reflection and looked at that. So we did a code gen at this point. But, this might not be the way that you want things to look, so we might want to change that. Still, it worked. Now I can hit details, and I have no details view. Now, the app is still running, I think. So let's go and say add view details, pick details, hit add. I just want to point out where that showed up. This is an important point about MVC. We're in views slash dinners, and then I've just added something called details. There's a lot of this stuff going on, and this is one of the first things that freaks new people out, is that there's a lot of conventions. They're easy to understand conventions, but they are still conventions. In the sense of, there's not a giant XML file that I'm about to like bust out, like typical Microsoft conference, where it's like, and look at the super sitemap.xml! And it's like, 2 megabytes of angle brackets that hide that all of this stuff is in a certain place. There's nowhere in a file somewhere that says that's where things go. It's simply convention, which is actually expressed by this very useful yellow screen of death, which is nice. So the team has actually said, hey, I looked in all of these places in this order for that thing. So it's actually teaching me the convention right here. I'm in the dinners controller. I asked for dinners slash details slash two. It said I couldn't find details. I couldn't find its master. I looked in these three places. That tells me where to put it. It also tells me something else that I could maybe put it in shared, and this could be a shared resource. Now, I did that just now with InVisual Studio, so I can hit F5 and have it crash horrifically. Why did that crash, Phil? Let's go find. What's that? Did I recompile? Should I have to recompile a view? Yeah. And the cake is done. Woohoo! Yeah. How can a dinner not have a model? I have an ID. Touche, anonymous voice in the crowd. Well played, sir. Well played. You didn't write the code. Why is it not working? Ah!
That's a limitation of every seat.
So skillful and seasoned presenter that I am, I meant to do that. Yeah, so. Thank you, anonymous voice. I owe you a taco. Repo.getDinner doesn't exist. I love that you guys keep me honest. So if this dinner doesn't come back, then let's go and say return view not found. And if it did work, then we'll say return view dinner. Now this doesn't exist yet. Oops, not dinner, D. This doesn't exist yet, so we'll go ahead and generate that stub and then pop over there. I don't know all of the hotkeys, but I do okay. And I don't know why it always makes things internal. There we go. And then we'll go and say dinners and give me a single dinner. Oops. Most nerd dinners at my house are a single dinner. If the wife is still talking to me, it's usually just me, which is a nerd dinner, and that's okay. Okay, so I'm just going to go and grab that nerd dinner right there. And we're going to return it. But let's do this. We haven't made a not found yet. Let's go and say dinners, details 99999. So didn't find, not found. Now, I've been generating views so far, but I don't necessarily have to do that. I could just say I want to call it not found, and it's really not going to be based on anything at all. And I'll just get a basic one, and I'll say, dude, you're dining alone. F5. Right? So there we've got a not found handler for typing in that stuff. So now we got this. So he's like, thank you for finishing the work you should have done earlier in the talk. So that's pretty interesting. So people say that it's not like dragging data grids across from the toolbox, and it's not. I mean, it really is different. It doesn't have that real control, draggy encapsulation of functionality mechanism. But if you understand what you're trying to do, you can achieve some pretty quick things with not a lot of effort. But a lot of people are uncomfortable with this notion of generation, the idea that I've generated something, maybe I didn't have control over it. So one of the things, a little more advanced technique that we could do to make this page look nicer would be to pull some code generation templates that were used. When you say add view and you pop this open, these are T4 templates. These are default code templates that come with MVC, and you can modify them. And because of this convention that they've put in where if you find a file, use it, and if you don't, do something else, it's really kind of elegant. We can go and pop over to this folder, which is deep, deep in the bowels of Microsoft Program File, Common 7, da, da, da. This is down. These zip files represent the file new something, right? So when you say file new something, Visual Studio is unzipping that, and it's doing that. This is how you can make your own stuff. But what we want to see is code templates. Add controller and add viewer in there. I'm just going to grab that entire folder, code templates, and I'm going to drag it over here. Where's Phil? Where do I drag it, Phil? Drag it to the root, he says, and it doesn't work. I think that's No, no, I think it's because I blew away Explorer earlier and ran it as admin. When you have something running as admin and something that's not running as admin, you can't drag things between them, which is stupid of me to run Explorer as admin. Makes it easier, though. Switch over here and hit refresh and see nothing. Then I click the Don't Lie to Me button. I always think, like, you know, like maybe the fifth time I hit refresh, it'll show up, but it never does. And then there's a trick, though. I don't really want these compiled, right? Phil showed me this. These are text templates, but I don't really want any custom tools. I don't want them to do anything because they're not being used at compilation time. They're being used by the system, by that file new dialog. And if we, let's see if we open up details. Now, T4 is this templating technology, and this is already in Visual Studio. You have this. You may know that you have this already. It's the greatest secret inside of Visual Studio, that you have a complete code generation engine inside there. But you don't get syntax highlighting. So, you know, it's not really exposed in a very cool way. There are a lot of editors that you can get, like the Clarius T4 editor, that'll get you syntax highlighting. And this is kind of, you know, code next to code, so you switch in and out of these contexts. So let's scroll down and find that for loop here. Yeah, so here's some HTML, and then here's some code. Right, so field set and legend is being output, and then there's some code for each property and properties. That's where it's spinning through that dinner object. So we switch back here, property key value, property key value. So if we put in like poop before that, and then go back over here, and we'll toss details, and we'll go add view. And we'll make a dinner detail. And you see, because I called my template details, it overwrote it. But what's cool is that I could make other templates, and they would show up in here. So this is where you can do some real serious damage at your company, is making your own custom kinds of views. And we'll go and hit add. And then we gen that. So I could make mobile views or custom views returning RSS or whatever kind of thing you wanted to return. You have control because you're ultimately just generating text. He gives you that flexibility to just drop that code templates in. And what's cool about that is I can now give my project to Rob as a zip file, and the code templates lives in there. And he can immediately use it. He doesn't have to go and install anything in program files. So it's overriding the defaults, which is pretty hot. And then, of course, I forgot to name it details. So that's cool. So this is the part where I will then wave my hands and go and do create and edit and update and delete. Let's switch over to step two. So you can generate your CRUD stuff very, very quickly. I have a buddy of mine sat down at Chipotle yesterday, and we wrote down a whole list of jokes that I would tell in case Visual Studio started to take a long time. So anytime we're waiting for longer than like 4 or 5 seconds, I'll just bust out with really bad one-liners from the web. So here's version 2, and let's see how we're doing here. So we fast-forwarded a little bit. Site still looks about the same. Right, so I've moved things around a little bit. We've got our list of dinners. I changed the way that looked. We've got some stuff going on there. On this home page here, there's a couple things that I want to change. I want to add a map that we saw just a moment ago in the details. I want to have maps in here. I want to look up some popular dinners, so that's something I want to make a change to. But one of the things also is that I don't really like this URL. The URL is /dinner/details. Let me freeze on that. So by default, the route that we were given was controller, action, and then ID. Which is a really great default route and works for a lot of stuff. But considering that I'm trying to launch a new company here, nerddinner.com, I don't want to tell people, hey, dude, nerddinner.com/dinner/details/4. It just doesn't quite roll off the tongue. So I wanted to make it like nerddinner.com/7. That's kind of my goal. So I want to change that But I don't really want to make any major changes in the application. And I really haven't been thinking about URLs yet. So what we can do is we can poke around inside of routing. Routing is a fundamental aspect of ASP.NET MVC that a lot of people initially dismiss as URL rewriting. And this is a really, really important point. Because we've all done URL rewriting at some point. We want to change a URL. The request comes in from the browser, and it's like, you know, slash foo, and you want to say, nope, if it matches this regex, go over here. Well, that's a one-way thing. That is rewriting a URL in progress. But the routing table and the routing concepts in MVC and in ASP.NET 3.5 SP1 are declarations of what routes should look like, and they are two-way. So that means not only can I express a route, but I can ask, give me a URL for this thing I'm trying to accomplish. I could say, you know, in a world where I were going to call dinner details, how would that URL look? It's kind of a hard concept until you actually see it. So I'm just going to go here and say routes.mapRoute, and I'm going to name it. So I'm actually doing a named route, and this route is named so that I can be specific. I can actually request a route by name as opposed to saying figure it out. I'm going to say I want a pretty details route. And all this route is going to have, instead of controller, action, and ID, is it's just going to have ID. Okay, and that's assuming from the root. And then when that route, I was in Australia a little while back. Apparently, root is a horrible word there, and you can offend someone. And someone told one of the coders who was on stage that, yeah, dude, don't say root. It's bad. And then he couldn't get that out of his head, so he spent the entire talk going rooting. Oh God, routing. Oh, root. And then there's just the giggling sound of the Australians. Okay, so what we're saying here, let's see if I'm allowed to step down. This is our default route. Controller, action, and ID. And that's a really good generic route because you've got a foo controller and a bar action. You automatically are able to address that by going slash foo slash bar. And you're often pulling stuff out of a system by ID, so they just put ID in there by default. Now, the important thing about routes as it relates to URLs is that that right-hand side can be removed, right? So I could say slash dinners. I could say slash dinners slash index. I could say slash dinners slash index slash one. But I could chop off each bit. So you need this default section here that's saying if anything's missing, this is what you want to replace it with. So what I'm saying here is I just have ID. I'm not going to get controller or action. So by default, the controller is going to be dinners, and the action is going to be details. So otherwise, it wouldn't know where to route that to. But the problem with that, though, is I'm asking for a URL that's going to be right there at the top. You know, it's already kind of reserved for slash dinners or slash accounts or slash whatever. I need to make sure that it doesn't accidentally try to turn my number, my ID, which is an integer, into a string. So I give it a constraint. That second line there is a constraint. So here I'm saying it's going to be one or more digits. And that's how that works. Phil, what would happen if I removed that? I'm asking you, Phil, seriously, it's interactive. Let's find out. Bad things will happen. Crazy stuff. I probably should have told a joke right then. Right? Dinner not found. Got confused. It tried to, I don't know what it did. Who knows, man? But let's go and add that and recompile. How many Microsoft PMs does it take to put in a light bulb? Let me take that feedback to the team, and I'll get back to you. Right, so there you go. So by giving it a constraint, you're able to route that appropriately. And this is really important, because you'll find that as your routing tables get more and more and more sophisticated, you're going to find that you will initially write what they call greedy routes, routes that will match stuff that you really don't want to match. You might say, oh yeah, I want blog post slash month slash day. But if you don't go and say that month is one or two digits, then you could find other routes that will match to that if five or six digits show up. So you want to make sure that your route describes the least amount of information that can be expressed. and that way it won't interfere with other ones. And then there's route debuggers. I think Phil's got some information at his blog, and Steve and Walter have got both route debuggers that when you have a route with 15, 20 different things, it can be complicated. So you're going to want to write tests to test those routes and make sure that you're not getting the wrong information passed on to your system. Now, I named that route so we could potentially ask for it by name elsewhere. I could go and say route URL and say route URL slash, route URL and ask for it by name. Let me see here. How did this work? Here's my list where I've got geek out. By default, it changed the URL. And this is a really amazing thing that I didn't go and change that view. I didn't hard code anywhere that I wanted it to be dinner slash details. It just knew when it was listing these out that that would work. Let's find out why. Dinners, index, two cannibals are eating a clown. One cannibal says the other cannibal, does this taste funny? HTML action link on line 18 says, I'm going to have a title of a dinner, and I want to link that to the details page. Not the details page, excuse me, the details action. See, this is the thing. I'm an old school web forms guy, so I'm still getting used to this. But the point is that we're not saying we're linking to a page. We're linking to an action. I've been doing this for 18 months, and I still make that mistake. Because one of the things that web forms people often make mistakes, junior web forms folks, is like they'll hit like, you know, localhost slash trace.axd, right? And they'll go, okay, well, where's that file on disk? And you go hunting around. We've all done that before where we've been doing some work in HTTP handlers. We go and we hit a hand, okay, where's that? Oh, it's not on disk. It doesn't exist. Because instinctively we have the sense that what's in the URL represents what's on disk. Okay? And in web forms that's not true, but it's usually true. Right? Foo.aspx usually means there's a foo.aspx on disk. So I think about URL and page. In MVC, that's been completely removed because we've got this concept of a controller that's going to be created and a method's going to be called. And there's a relationship between that controller and its method and what's going on in the URL. Somebody says slash dinner slash details slash one. We're going to go and make a new dinner controller, call the details method, and pass in the index. But now I've changed this route. And I've made it so I can say dinner slash one. And all of my links in my application automatically got updated because I was never referring to pages and URLs. I didn't hard code, although I could have, slash dinner slash details slash one here. I used an HTML helper and I said, I want an action link. Link me to the details action. And there's lots and lots of overloads that you can use. And there's also things like URL.route URL. And these are all ways for you to request from the routing tables, give me a URL that will accomplish this thing that I want to do. So I'm actually saying, give me a URL that will get me to the details method passing this in. So you can change the entire structure of your application and how it is addressed from a URL perspective if you follow those rules. And you'll find yourself in trouble, as I have, when I have hard-coded URLs and then messed around with my routes. That's a really big mental leap I have found for a lot of folks in starting out in MVC. And if you're an old-time MVC person, you've probably found the same thing. So let's go back to the home page, and let's get that get some kind of a map over here. So I've made a couple of scripts. Here's some scripts that come with MVC. Let me zoom in here. So by default, you get jQuery. I've got the minimized version of jQuery here, and then the VS Doc. The VS Doc is that documentation that's going to give you the IntelliSense for jQuery. And that comes in. And I've got MS Ajax, and then the MVC extension for Ajax. Then I just made this nerddinner.js. So that's the only JS file that I've gone and added at this point. So I'm just going to call loadmap. And this is a virtual Earth thing. I didn't know anything about virtual Earth, but Dave Ward and I, and Koja.com, Dave Ward and I sat down, we figured out the Earth SDK. Basically, you include this one line of JavaScript for virtual Earth, and then you get this VE map, namespace, and object, and you can start messing around. So we have this div for Nerd Dinner, and I'm going to say make a new map, turn off bird's eye, set the dashboard size to being small, and then if you have a latitude and longitude, which we don't yet, go ahead and set that, and then call load map. So this is all not MVC specific. This is, hey, I wanted a JavaScript library. How do I do it? Back over here, I've just got this map, div the map, and I gave it a size, and I probably should have styled it a little differently. Down at the bottom here, we're going to go and say document.ready, and I'm going to make a function. And this function is a way of saying I want to have this called when the document is finished loading, and we'll say nerddinner.loadMap. Are the brackets wrong? Yeah, I just do that. Thanks. People who can read JavaScript are weird people. Because it's like someone in the speaker room earlier was, someone said something like, yeah, I couldn't get such, such, such. Oh, yeah, well, that's a display colon none float left, and then you need to use the box map and the thing with the hack. And it was just like, it was like when you meet a random white guy who speaks Chinese, you know? It's just like, wow, that is amazing. I just wanted to stare. But, you know, he was just going CSS, CSS. He was talking CSS, and I wanted to just stare at him. You know, there's actually game shows in China and in Japan that are basically called White Guy Speaks Chinese. And they tell them riddles, and if they get it right, that shows that they really know the language. It's true. We should do that with CSS because, from my point of view... It is a crazy-ass language. Okay, so all that was get some JavaScript, set up a div, and then I've got a map, right? So I need to get some dinners, and I need to maybe make an AJAX call, and maybe I'll find the most popular dinners, and I'm going to create a list on that right-hand side there. So we're going to be doing some AJAX. This is just jQuery here. I added a couple of things like when you click the search button and some different stuff. I'm still kind of learning jQuery, so I'm in no way an expert. But let me see here. Let's do this. This is step two. Why don't we write a test rather than doing it the regular way? I've got a bunch of tests. If you go and hit run tests, let's run them and see how we're doing first. Dun, 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 test, test, test. Green, 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 green. Boom. Hey, look at that. So by default right now, NerdDinner's got 94 tests. And I want to do something test-driven. So I'm not quite sure how I'm going to implement this yet. So yeah, to-do needs more tests. Let's make another test. People think that's silly, but I love typing in to-do. Tests method, public void. Now, the alt.net guys like really long method name, so get most popular dinners action with no limit returns expected dinners on Tuesday, or what is today? Yeah, whatever, you get the idea. And I probably should have typed it a little better, but there's all the Diet Coke coursing through my veins. Typically, you want to do this thing, this pattern, the AAA pattern, which is arrange, act, and assert when you're doing tests. And MVC really lends itself to testing because the separation of concerns between what a controller does and his responsibility and what a view does and their responsibilities is very separate. So in this case here, I'm going to set up tests to describe how I want my controller to work, but it's important to note that this is test driven, meaning I'm going to describe the way I want it to work, but it doesn't yet exist. So I'm testing something that does not yet exist, and in the hopes of it affecting the design. I know that I'm going to need a controller. So over here, I'm just going to say, and I've made a function called create search controller that I'll show you in a second to do a little helper action. So arrange for me is just get a search controller. And this is important to note because remember earlier when I said you hit a URL and somebody makes the controller and somebody calls the method? Well, that somebody is Phil. He's inside your computer and he's doing those things because the system makes those decisions. The MVC engine is the thing that news up a controller, and the MVC engine is what calls that method. But when you're in a test, there's no IIS, there's no ASP.NET, there's no system to make a controller, and no one's going to call that unless you do. And that's kind of the beauty of it. And the controller doesn't know that he's not running in IIS. Have you ever tried to test web forms? If you ever try to do any kind of unit testing in web forms, you'll find it's very, very difficult, because what does web forms expect? It expects that it's living inside of ASP.NET, that it has a context, that someone's passed in cookies and all that kind of stuff. MVC tries to avoid that at all costs. So we're going to be doing JSON. So I'm going to want to make sure that my controller returns JSON. But I'm going to say controller dot and get most popular dinners. And I could pass in like a limit, like pass in like 10, but I'll say null for now. We'll make it nullable. And this is saying that it doesn't exist yet. Get most popular dinners we're going to write over in the search controller. And that's our action. We're taking action there. And then I want to assert a couple of things here. First, this probably needs to be a JSON result. Now, typically, we've been returning views. We say return view this, return view that. And that's saying to the system, go over and find that view, render the view, and return that HTML. But we're going to use a JSON result. All of these things derive from action result. These are all things that you can take action on. Now, this JSON result that I'm kind of envisioning that I'm going to return from this controller is going to sit inside of result.data. That right there should be a JSON result. So, and I could, if I want, I could say is instance of type. And I'd say, well, this is the type I want to check, and I want to make sure that this is going to return a type of, it's going to be full of a list of JSON dinners. I could potentially assert the type of this JSON result, but it wouldn't have succeeded in this defensive cast if I didn't. I could say type of list of JSON dinner. And down here, let's say assert r equal. And I think there are 40 dinners in a database. I don't know. I expect 40. And let's see, dinners. I'm probably going to need to get those dinners out of here, so we'll say var dinners equals result.data, and I'm going to cast that after this assert to a list of dinners. The JSON result is going to package all that stuff up. So list of dinners and assert it equals dinners.count. Okay? So I've said I'm going to go and call this method. I'm going to pass in null, which should give me all of the dinners. I'm going to make sure that I got back JSON dinners from my JSON result. And I should probably assert that the result isn't null, too. And then I'm going to take that data inside of there, make sure it's a list of dinners, and then assert that there's 40 of them. So I'm not really making a JSON call, though, here. But I'm saying that I want that dinner controller to return, that search controller, rather, to return a thing of a type JSON result. And this is a really important thing. It takes a little while to get your head around. There's no browser involved. There's no JSON around. There's no serialization involved. There's no curly braces involved. I'm really confirming the controller's intent to return these JSON dinners, right? I'm confident that the ASP.NET framework will serialize it itself, and that'll be an integration test later. Let's go over here in search controllers, though. And put something in there. I've got a JSON dinner, and I made this little method here, JSON dinner from dinner, because I didn't really feel like it was the right thing to do to take my dinner object from link to SQL and serialize it as JSON, because it didn't feel right. So this is really what they call a view model situation, where there's the model, dinners, and then there's what the view needs to know about dinners, a view model, a view-specific model. I just made a little thing here that's going to say, you give me a dinner, I'll give you a JSON dinner. And JSON dinners are a little bit simpler than regular dinners. Okay, and let's go and make our... somebody's having fun back there. They're either trying to get in or trying to get out. So I know it's moving slow, but I don't think it's that bad. I love this. Do you ever do the nullables? Int? I always think that in my head when I type that. Could be an int. Now here it says not all code paths return a value. Let's do this by default. Let's return null. Now this is a really important aspect of test-driven development. I need to run this test, and I need to see it fail. I need to know that it can fail. And if I'm really, really hard hard code. If I'm really hardcore about it, I would see each of those assertions fail. I want to watch all of my expectations about what is wrong need to happen. I now expect that, good, I've run the tests, and I know that it can fail. If you write the test and write the code at the same time, and you get it right first, like you nail the green light, don't cheer. Go back and break it. You need to see it be wrong to prove that it can break, because it's possible to write tests that cannot fail. And those are just extra green lights that don't actually tell you anything. This is why they call it red, green, refactor. Or if you're colorblind, gray, gray, refactor. So dinner repository, find upcoming dinners. And then limit is cool, because we're going to say if limit, because it's nullable, has value. So if it doesn't have a value, then I'll just make it 40 for now. And var dinners equals from dinner in dinners, from dinner in dinners, and then order by. And I want to make, I think a popular dinner would be, from a nerd perspective, would be if anyone came. That would be my sense of success. This needs to be var dinners, and this needs to be some more dinners. I don't know at this point. Popular. So this is popular. Order by dinner. RSVPs. Count. Yes. So success in this case is showing up, descending. Now this is interesting because I have these dinners. These dinners are the model style dinners, right? This is the real linked to SQL object that came back. This was generated by my little ORM here. I'm going to instead say select JSON dinner from dinner. I'm going to call that method. I'm going to pass in my dinner. So that's what's going to get returned. So I'll say return, and this is cool. You, instead of saying return view, I'll say return JSON. And I can pass in this data. So I can take my popular dinners, and we'll take just the limit, right? We're just going to take the first 40 and pass those in. We'll make those a list. Okay, so now I've got a method that'll do that. Let's run that. Okay, so find the dinners. If there was no limit passed in, we'll make it 40. Grab the dinners, and if anyone's coming, sort by the most popular one first. Grab the first 40 ones and return them, and then I'm going to make sure that it is that number, because I've got more than 40 dinners. I want to see just 40 come back. And then it passed. Okay? Does that make sense? So we went into, we're conceived of something. We haven't actually done it yet. This is the other thing about test-driven development, because you're ready to, like, let's go to lunch. We just wrote the test. We actually have to call the JavaScript, too, and make that happen. So in this case, we've passed the test. We've proven that it at least behaves like that. And in this case, I might go and write more tests. I might write probably 3 or 4 more tests, because in this case, I've proven that I can pass in no limit. I probably need another one where I pass in various limits, some edge cases, pass in 0. I want to see a couple of things break before I feel really good about that. Now, I want to make this available, though, and have someone pass it in. So I'm going to say that I'm going to accept verbs, HTTP verbs, post. People are going to use post, and they're going to call this method with JSON. Back over in here, let's find our nerd dinner JS. I wrote a little find most popular dinners. So there's a bunch of different ways to call AJAX, but I really like this jQuery way, and there's a couple different methods actually in jQuery. But here I'm just saying post, and then remember that the default route, well, that's going to work great for us here. We've got a search controller, and we've got a get most popular dinners method, so I'll say slash search slash get most popular dinners, right? That's that route. Passing in limit, we're going to be posting that information, so I'm not going to be including it in the URL. And then I've got a callback there called render dinners. This is a client-side callback. So remember, this is happening on the client side. Render dinners is an interesting one. And I'm still learning, but I think this is kind of interesting. Basically, it takes that div on the top. Let's read this from the top to the bottom. So 123 says, empty that div on the right. Right? That's that one that's empty already. It could be stuff in there. Clear the map. And then look at the each on line 127. For each dinner in this dinners. And this is interesting because this is JavaScript. I don't have like a defined version of the dinner somewhere over there. This is a dynamic language. When I said return JSON, MVC is automatically using the JSON serializer to serialize that and move it across the wire as curly braces. And because JavaScript is a dynamic language, it's going to automatically make an object that looks like whatever came back, the shape of whatever came back. I said that JSON dinners would have titles and IDs and dates. So this is the first time we've been talking about dinner and dinners. There's no like header file somewhere that describes dinners. This is a virtual Earth thing, VE. So they're saying, hey, go get a latitude and longitude of this particular dinner. I'm going to go and load the pin on the map, called load pin. And this is kind of wacky. I just did it because it was wacky. Where we're going to take that dinner list on the right-hand side there, and then this is a big Fluent interface that you can use to build HTML dynamically. There's lots of different ways I could have done this, and I'll show you another way in a little bit. I could have had a little mini view and returned the HTML from that view, to the server side would generate the HTML for that right-hand side. I'd take that HTML, transmit it across the wire, and then slap it in there. And that's totally valid, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I want to show that there's many, many ways to do that depending on what you need. If I had other analytics that needed to work on dinners, this is nice because now I've got a dinner object in memory and I can do other work on that as opposed to retrieving a view. So you can move multiple things across the wire. And typically when people say AJAX, that includes bringing views of HTML across the wire. So here I'm just saying, hey, take that list and append this list die and make it a dinner item and go grab some HTML for it, same function I used there. Then grab the date for it and say it's this date with X number of people RSVPing. Then we just call some methods inside of the virtual Earth to set the view because I want to make sure all the pins that came back show up there. Otherwise, I'd be just zoomed in on the US. And then down there at the bottom, this is interesting. This is a jQuery selector, CSS selector, that says, for all of those things that have the class dinner item, for each of them, go and fire up this hover event. And the hover is kind of a synthetic event that jQuery creates, where they're basically hooking up mouse enter and mouse leave. So what I'm doing here is I'm hooking up all of those items on the right. So when you hover over them, it shows a bubble, the little info box on the map. So you're kind of linking the two. For each of these items on the right, hook up that bubble on the left. So back over here then, we've loaded the map. Then we need to call nerddinner dot, I think I called it, find most popular dinners? Find most popular dinners? Dinners. All right, and let's see what happens. So this is going to happen on document ready. So this is the default view because it's kind of boring by default. You show up and it's like, hey, the US. Oh, cool, there we go. So see what happened there? So it started up, we had that initial load of the map, and then right after that on document ready, we made a JavaScript call, we did that link query, we returned the JSON, we lined it up, and now I can hover over these and get a nice box there. Isn't that cool? Apparently not. Thank you for that smattering of applause. Appreciate that. That is really special. It's that kind of relationship that we have, you and I, the public. Did you guys hear about the meat grinder? He got a little behind in his work. Hey, you asked for it. If you had clapped, I wouldn't have told that joke. All right. What's that? Rim shot. Actually, what is that? Hang on. Audio guy, get ready. Instantrimshot.com. Thank you. All right. .com. Cool. So one of the things that I've been doing so far is doing all of this work inside of the boring blue look and feel. But the boring blue look and feel is pretty clean. It's nice to be working in MVC because you're using divs and ULs and LIs. This markup was pretty straightforward. So I handed this markup over to a guy named Michael Bach. Michael Bach is one of the marketing guys at Microsoft that did the slash web site. So if you go to microsoft.com/web, turns out he's also a badass designer. So I gave him this markup and said, dude, go and make it pretty without messing up the markup. And he went and did this. So there's my dinners. Oh, there's Australians now. Cool. People are going to hang out in Australia. Rock on. So I got to think about functionality. I got to think about markup and JavaScript, and he went and did this for me. So this got us thinking. We're like, okay, well, if this is all I have to do to make the entire site look awesome, you know, maybe this whole semantic web thing isn't a bunch of crap like I thought. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't think that. How can I use this information to profit? File new company, right? I got to figure out a business model that's more than just ads. It's like, you know, how am I going to get the nerds to give me money? Nerds are notoriously cheap people. It's okay for me to say that I'm a nerd, so it's not racist. Quite sure how that works. So what I can do is I can change the way the view engine works. Remember I said earlier about separation of concerns. We're making our own controllers. We've got those views over there. There's a default view engine. When I said return view, somebody had to find that. We talked about how that was a convention. It found details automatically. It went and it looked at the dinner controller, and it looked at the method it was on. It said, oh, he's on dinner controller. He's on the details. He probably wants this view. I can override that functionality. I can take over. So we can go and derive from WebForm view engine and make ourselves a mobile-capable view engine. So I go and override find view, which passes in enough information for me to make some pretty cool decisions. So I can go and say, hey, is the user agent an iPhone? I don't want you to go into views. I want you to go into views / mobile / iPhone. But I want you to keep going after that. So that means now that I've got / views, and then I can have / mobile, / iPhone, / Pocket PC, / you know, Internet Explorer mobile, whatever, drop in alternative views. Here I've got MS Mobile 6, I've got Pocket IE, and I'm querying these devices to see if they're mobile. Now, mobile in the Microsoft world a couple years ago was a bunch of mobile controls. This was back in the WAP, black and white, kind of tiny Nokia phone days. And it wasn't very much fun because phones were entirely different. And they had these adaptive renderings where it was like, this awesome phone gets a calendar, and this lame phone gets like 7 pages of date pickers, right? And it didn't work. It didn't make it awesome everywhere. It made it suck everywhere. But now, fast forward a couple of years, and everyone's using XHTML. Most browsers on mobile phones can use XHTML basic. Now, I don't know if you guys heard, but the guys that are doing Hotmail Mobile just put something out on CodePlex. And this is huge. And I think that this is the kind of huge where no one's going to get how huge it is. They'll be like, oh, yeah, cool, good job. Yeah. This is massive, so believe it. This is the mobile device browser file. It came out today. And this is, from data on Hotmail, the top like 500 mobile devices in a giant app browser file that you simply drop in app_browsers on your system. This gives you the capabilities of all of those devices. So then suddenly, mobile is fun again. I can go over here in app browsers where I've dropped that in, open up my mobile browser file, and I can, look at this. Boom. 75,000 lines. So let's go and say, all right, so here's a Nokia 606. And they've done this work for you. Supports MP3, doesn't support WAV, supports PNG. So now I can go and write handlers and stuff to say, well, I'm going to use PNGs for everything, but if supports PNG equals false, maybe I'll take that PNG and then just do a little quick, you know, system.drawing kind of action on it and then return a JPEG. So I can get an awesome experience on every device, and I can start querying these devices for, well, what's the longest URL this device can handle? Or does it support CSS, but most importantly, does it support CSS background color, which a lot of mobile devices don't? Then things start getting interesting. They've done that work for us, and they've made it Microsoft PL, permissive license, knock yourself out license. Isn't that cool? This is going to make, oh, hey, tell the mobile Hotmail guys, this is huge. This is a, actually it is physically huge too. Let's see how big this thing is. This file is, it goes in app browsers, 4.1 megabytes of work that they have done for us. But I don't have to worry about any of that because this plugs into the existing infrastructure. Just by dropping that file in there, I can go and say, is mobile device, and feel good about whether or not it is mobile device. And I'll show you what else I can do. I can ask it questions like, well, let's bring our views in first. Down here, this is what views look like now. We've got home and shared, right? So I'm going to need mobile and the different mobile devices underneath it. I'm going to grab those views from the stuff folder. And those views are going to go over these views. Inside of them is just the mobile ones. It's going to say, do you want to merge them? And I'm going to hope I'm doing the right thing. Go back over here. Mobile. 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 So now I'm going to detect whether it's a mobile device. I'm going to pick the right view. Let's take a look down here in shared. This is master pages. Master pages still work on mobile devices. And I'm going to go and bring up that site master. And here, inside of that browser object, by virtue of the fact that I dropped that file in, I can query what's the size of this screen on this device and set the viewport appropriately. So here is just a little mobile site, much simpler XHTML. So let's do this. Let's fire up the. Don't freak out. Yes, I know. Don't be mean. No need for that. I know where everything is. So. Cool. Like that. But wait, that's not all. Dun, 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 dun. I also make julienne fries. That's all JavaScript. Optimized for every device. I've got 6-on-6 versions, mobile versions, I can make Nokia versions, whatever you want. So why is this possible? Why is this possible? It's because MVC lets me control every single byte that comes out of the wire. I have complete control over this. Let's take a look at the nerddinner.com site, which is here, and that mobile device browser file. Give me an hour and a half and I'll blog all about it and explain in detail how you can do this. This site right here, let's take a look at this using the W3C validator. And I'll while I do this, I'll show you an interesting thing that happens when you start looking for lots of different devices. So you might initially think, oh, wow, I can cheer now. But check this out. XHTML basic. Basic, why is that? That's not right. So it turns out, this happened last night at 3 in the morning, that the user agent that the W3C uses is now 1.0.606. Well, 606 is a very popular Nokia phone. So I am detecting that this is now the Nokia browser, and I give them the mobile version of the site. So now I can feel good that the mobile version of my site is XHTML1.1. But the neat thing about here is I can go into their validation service, and I believe I can just pass in the information directly because I want to prove that the site itself is also awesome. Validate by direct input. Now, you go, this is IE8. One of the things a lot of people don't realize about IE8 is you go down to Tools and hit Developer Tools, and there is a bunch of really awesome tools in here that I think are as awesome as Firebug, or in some cases, awesomer. And I can go down here and say Validate. I can say Validate Local HTML, Validate HTML, and it'll take me up there to these places automatically. I'm going to grab the source for this application here. I'm going to drop it in there and check my markup. Boom. So nerddinner.com is XHTML strict. That's not XHTML wimpy. It's XHTML strict. That means that's why it was so easy for my designer to make things work. It's why MVC allowed. I mean, MVC just makes it so simple to do this kind of stuff. No byte went out the wire without me knowing about it and feeling that it was going to be okay. I'm going to blog about all of this stuff in detail. And let me think what else. Oh, yeah, the last thing, I forgot to show you that the way that I switched that view engine was here in the global ASA. We just fired in the view engine. You can have multiple kinds of view engines, but in this case here, I'm just replacing the default view engine by basically clearing it out and dropping mine in. So it's a very simple thing. I did the iPhone version in about 4 hours, and I did the Windows Mobile version in about an hour and a half. It's really, really easy. I'm going to continue to work on that. I want to remind you that nerddinner.com is all open source also. I've already received 6 or 7 different patches for cool stuff. It's a learning process as I continue to learn this stuff in public, a lot like Rob Connery has taught us in public using the MVC storefront. I would encourage you to check out nerddinner.com and also codeplex.com/nerddinner. where you can get that stuff and upload patches. I'm going to write up details on how we did mobile and how you can start using this stuff to make mobile versions of your site in MVC. All this was done in MVC 1.0, and we've got a book coming out. Come and get your Moo cards. We got Rob here, Phil's here. The Goo doesn't hang out with us anymore because he's too cool for us. And that is all the time I've got. Thank you very much. I've been Scott Hanselman. Jazz hands. Thanks. So if you guys want to ask some questions, you can come on up and I can repeat the questions and stuff like that. And then I guess the next person's going to come up and start setting up. But hey, thanks for putting up with me during this whole process.